We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Five Star App Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host, Ariel Garten, one of the founders of brain sensing headband, Muse. Join us each week as we introduce you to authors, experts, and thought leaders who share their stories on how meditation, mindfulness, and brain-focused practices have the power to change our lives. Whether you're just learning to meditate or want to deepen your practice, Meditation Studio, with hundreds of guided meditations, and Muse, which gives you real-time feedback on your mind during meditation, and Muse 2, which also tracks your breath, your heart, and your body, are tools you'll definitely want to have in your back pocket. Now, here's this week's episode with Ariel.
So when you're perfusing the brain with dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, endorphins, all of these positive hormones, they actually create a better environment to create new neural connections. They actually support that connection making.
Ariel, you've gotten me to talk about so many things I haven't talked about. Man, we are fast forwarding through so much. Thank you for that. And it's through that you basically make the rest of the landscape for habit formation more fertile, you know, and that's something that I don't often get to talk about. I mentioned in the book, but that's exactly right.
Hello and happy new year. I hope everybody had an amazing holiday time and the start to the new year has been magnificent. We have a really special treat today to kick off 2020. So I imagine most of us have been making some form of resolution. The last decade was about X, and the next decade is going to be about Y, Z, and A, B, and C. Well, in order to accomplish X, Y, Z, A, B, and C, we probably need some plan, some vision, some way to execute our goals and dreams. Our guest today, BJ Fogg, is going to help us do just that. He is one of the world's foremost experts on behavior change and how to start and create habits that are actually going to stick and actually going to work. So anybody's diet plan, meditation plans, desires for the future that you want to have and the semi-perfect you that will be evolving out of the beautiful butterfly cocoon that we have been in for the last decade, here's a man who may make some portion of those dreams slightly more true. Welcome, BJ.
Ariel, thank you for inviting me.
It is my sincere pleasure. First question, how was your New Year's?
Oh my gosh, it was in transition. It was good. I mean, it's great to start a new decade, but my book launch has been planned for New Year's Eve 2019, 3 days ago, for 2 years. So there's been, and we moved from Maui to California and then moved on here to New York. So it's been busy, but the book's out and the response has been really, really great. And so I guess the answer is it's been an awesome way to start this decade.
So you've started the decade with your new book, Tiny Habits, and today you're going to share a little bit about the methodologies that you recommend in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm so excited.
So if somebody's going to make habit change, what's the best way to do it? Loaded question.
Well, yeah, I know. The way that we've been taught for decades, the way how the culture thinks about habits, most of it is wrongheaded. It takes us in the wrong direction. So what I'm excited about sharing is a way to create habits and to change our life that works, and it's easy, and it's fast, actually, if you do it in the right way. And it's not guesswork. And so I'll break down some of it, and I'm sure we'll go deeper into some of the parts. But first and foremost, start with forming habits that you want and not ones that you feel like you should have.
New Year's Eve is all of a sudden just coming to kick me in the ass. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't work. You know, this is kind of what we've been set up is like, okay, you just pick a should, like something you should do, and somehow magically you can motivate yourself to get it done. I just don't see any evidence in everyday life or in research that works long term. But what does work is picking what you want. So now I'm going to the tiny habits method. Pick habits that you want. Pair them back to be super easy and super small. So let's say you want to read more. So pair that back to not even read one chapter, but read one paragraph or maybe even one sentence, and then find where that new habit, that teeny, teeny, tiny behavior fits in your life naturally. And in the tiny habits method, you look for what can it come after. So reading, for example, might come really well after you sit down on the train on your way to work. Then you open your book and read a paragraph. An obvious one that I talk about a lot is flossing comes after you brush. So the tiny habit recipe for that is after I brush, I will floss. And in this case, it's one tooth because you pair it back to be super tiny. And then there's the third part of the tiny habits method is you wire in the habit by what I call celebrating. You fire off a positive emotion, and that helps. As you know, that emotions change how our brain works. And in this case, the celebration, the positive emotion helps your brain like remember and want to do that behavior again. So you're basically self-reinforcing, but you're not doing it haphazardly. You're doing it deliberately.
You have by now thousands and thousands and thousands of people that have done this. I know you've watched behavioral change categorically, step by step, over literally tens of thousands of people to identify bit by bit what makes the most effective habit change.
I do have a study where I had some people sell a true experiment where people randomized, some people celebrated, some people didn't celebrate, and clearly different effects.
It's a fundamental piece. I mean, when we look at really any discipline, I live a lot in the world of healthcare and the world of meditation and the world of fitness. In each of these worlds, we look at how you create habit change, and the behavioral piece is the hardest part. We all know there are things that we should do that are good for us, and we just don't do them. Why don't we eat well? You know, why don't we exercise as much as we should? No amount of information is going to actually shift your behavior. And the question always is, but what does? So let's talk about one other thing that most people listening here care about, and it's the thing that people most commonly ask me: how do you start the habit of meditation, or how do you get yourself to meditate more often?
Well, this is why I like Muse. This is why before we started recording, I told you what a huge fan I am of Muse. Here's why I think meditation is a hard habit to wire. And yes, there are factors of we're really busy, but I think, as we've talked about, what wires in a habit is the feeling of success. It is so hard for people as they start to meditate to feel successful. They sit down and they just feel frustrated, I'm guessing. I haven't studied it, but you know, I know what needs to be there for the habit to form. And I know in my own experience, and you know, just casually talking to others, not studying it scientifically, is people just sit down and all they notice is how busy their minds are. So they're not feeling successful. So that's not going to wire in the habit. What I loved about Muse was the little birds chirping. Those were celebrations. It's like, you did it. Right? I was getting affirmation. I was getting a signal that I was succeeding. And that was a game changer for me. Because otherwise, I don't know if I'm succeeding when I meditate. So,
sorry, you've just actually blown my mind, because we knew we were doing it when we built it, but we didn't have your thesis that it fell into to like validate, like, oh, we're doing this because it is the self-reinforcement in this way.
It is, the chirps,
hearing you say this is sort of
mind-blowing
to me.
So, yes. Because there's no way I can know that I'm, you know, doing something with my brain and brainwaves, but with me is you've indicated that even if people can tune into like, yeah, it was really stormy and rainy, but now it's getting calmer, and they lower the bar for themselves. So what, that you're not hearing any chirping, you're able to calm the rain a little bit. That's great. Okay. And then eventually you'll hear a chirp here. It's like, oh my gosh. Well, at first it chirped through me because I got so excited I was thrown out, but later I could bring them on, and it just made me, it helped me feel successful.
So I have to tell you, the chirps, the bird chirps are actually also a way to undermine the goal-directed nature of this and bring back a mindfulness principle. So everybody, the first time they hear a bird, if you don't know what it is, it's just like, okay, that was a bird. As soon as you know that a bird is a reward, you're like, oh my God, I got a bird, and you get really excited, and then the bird flies away. So it is our way to subtly reinforce the habit while at the same time not getting you totally invested in your rewards. So you have to become as invested in your rewards as you are in your failures, essentially equanimous to them both, in order to actually succeed. That's the subtle mindfulness lesson that we imbued within them.
I love it. Well, I think it's great. I think it's terrific. Now, if somebody doesn't have that product, I think to reframe what success is, as a meditator, like just sitting on your mat, sitting, celebrate the fact that you actually did it. And I think the mistake is, and I'm not an expert on meditation, but if you think, oh, I'm going to have a calm mind like the Buddhist monk, and that's the standard of success, you're not going to wire in the habit. So just, you have to reframe what success in meditation is so you can achieve that. So it's achievable. So you can feel successful every time you meditate, every time.
That's awesome.
And I think maybe somebody's done it. I haven't mapped it all out, but you know, the simplest thing might be the fact that you actually sat there, you sat on the mat and you took three mindful breaths, bam. I know before I had Muse, what I really focused on was just, can I get three breaths without my mind wandering? Just three. And it was hard, but that was the standard. If I could do it, it's like, okay, good for me. Let's see if I can do it again. Just three breaths without my mind going off. So it wasn't like a high bar, but it was some way that I could feel successful. But that took some effort. I do like the birds chirping better. I love that. Yeah.
Awesome. So if you're trying to meditate, all you got to do is sit on the cushion. If you've nailed sitting on the cushion, all you got to do is get three breaths.
Lower your expectations so you can feel successful. Why? Because the feeling of success will wire in the habit. So by lowering the bar, you help yourself wire in the habit.
And
I guess
you help enhance all of the other, you help enhance other aspects of your experience of life by allowing yourself to feel this feeling of success continually.
Yeah. So I actually say that in Tiny Habits, something like, hey, it's time for somebody to say it. We got to lower our expectations, everybody. Lower your standards.
Lowered expectations.
Is there a song?
There used to be a Mad TV skit about lowered expectations. It was like a dating scene. It was great.
Right. Maybe I was channeling that. I was like an impressionable teen at that time. So there you have it. Yeah. Meditation is an amazing habit to form, but it is one of the most challenging. And what you've helped create, I think it's a game changer. So maybe we should be doing some research together on it. That would be awesome.
Totally happy to. Can you talk a little bit about the work that you did do to get to this? And how you've looked at literally tens of thousands of people and charted habits. It's quite fascinating.
Well, it started kind of a long time ago. About 20 years ago, I became really obsessed with simplicity. And then I just, you know, my earliest work was in looking at how computers can influence people's attitudes and behaviors. And I did the first set of systematic experiments to show, and this was in the mid 90s, to show that technology could influence our attitudes and it could be designed to change our behaviors. And at the time, everyone thought that was wacky stuff. You're like, oh no, we're never going to do that. Why would computers do that? It's like, well, but they're going to. And then I started putting the pieces together, pointing towards some of the problems which have happened. But I got really, when I looked at what was working in industry with the pattern was really simple things are the things that people embrace and adopted and engaged with. And it was like, wow, it's simplicity that changes behavior. And then, so I ran a class at Stanford on health habits. And one of the things that we all did as part of the class was, hey, everybody, go out and find six people and help them create a habit in any way you want. And I love doing things along with my students. So I did this thing called Team Yoda. And the idea was like, hey, sunscreen's important. And I wanted you to create the habit of sunscreen, but just put on one drop. You don't have to put on all the sunscreen. Just make it really simple. Put on one drop and go victory. Okay. Cause I already kind of knew that the victory thing worked, you know, celebration. And that just made me go, okay, well, not just me, that making it really simple and celebrating works for. And that I remember the end of the quarter came, December 4th or 5th. And I was like, okay, now I'm going to teach this to six people. And like 60 signed up. And so I taught them a 5-day program the next week at like 120. And after that, it was 180. And then it was like a couple hundred, 200 to 300 a week. And it's been that ever since. So here I am on email coaching people in habits in this method, knowing that the techniques worked because I could see it in my data week after week after week, but trying to optimize it. So I ran a bunch of different studies, people doing the habits alone versus in pairs and partners. I read studies of a texting version versus an email version, a 1-week version versus a 3-week version. I mean, essentially I had this petri dish where I could run studies really, really quickly, kind of on any topic that I want, including emphasizing celebration versus not. Now others are looking at, and there's some publications coming out from others that are validating, you know, some of my models and so on. And yes, my lab, the book was a ton of work. But we are, the next line of research we're doing in my lab will be more like systematic, fit the box academic work around emotions and how they create habits, comparing the feeling of success to the connection with purpose and seeing how versus not doing anything. And so having those three conditions and seeing which one wires in the habits the best. And so it might seem a subtle difference between celebration and visualizing or connecting with your purpose, but I think it is a really interesting question and it matters.
I imagine connecting with purpose would be incredibly meaningful for wiring habit, because when you connect with the purpose or the meaning of something, now all of a sudden it's tangible for you. You've made it a part of your own narrative. You know, when we're able to live with a narrative in my life and say, okay, well, now this is successful because I'm going to weigh less or I'm going to have done this in the world. When you connect it at your deepest level of hierarchy of needs, like the top level of your hierarchy of needs, but at the deepest level of your own motivation, I couldn't imagine it would be less motivating.
Well, and the way, I mean, there's various positive emotions. And I'm going back to my discussion with James Gross. And looking at his work and discussing with him, because I think he's one of the world's experts on emotions. There's various emotions that can help wire in habits. The emotion that I teach people to connect with is the feeling of success. Do something that helps me feel successful, like way to go beach, or I did it, or nice job, or something like that. And that feeling of success, that emotion has never had a name. There is no clear name for it. The closest would be this thing called authentic pride, but it's not exactly the same. But that's what's in the academic literature. So with encouragement of some of my academic colleagues, I named this emotion. And in my book, Tiny Habits, I give it a name. So that feeling, that internal feeling you have when you feel successful, I am calling that emotion shine. So shine is that emotion when you do something and feel successful, is that feeling of shine, that feeling of success. As you learn to create a feeling of success on demand, not only does it wire in the habits, as my data shows, it also seems to have a, an effect that generalizes out, that it affects your optimism, it affects your identity, it affects how you interact with others. And the subtitle of my book is, the title is Tiny Habits. The subtitle is The Small Changes That Change Everything. And most people think, oh, that's a whole bunch of small habits that change everything.
It's the shine.
It's, yes, it's you learn to feel and embrace shine and give others shine. And that's what changes everything.
You know, it's funny. My one resolution for 2020 was to shine more.
No,
I'm not kidding.
Seriously.
Not having read the book, the book was not available when I reached out to you for this podcast, but it literally was to shine more.
Oh my God.
So shine is a sensation that I feel from my heart outward. I started to wear more yellow. Anybody who's seen me will be like, why is she wearing that yellow sweater? Again, I have many of the same yellow sweater because I love them so much because I just want to shine. And when I shine, I'm feeling great. It's like literally the sensation of love from my heart. It's an open feeling. It's an expansive feeling. And I know that when I feel it, other people can feel it too. It's as if you walk in front of me and you can feel the shine.
See, and that's that. Yes, Tiny Habits. It's a method. It tells you how to create these habits. But the book is really about that. It's shine. And it's helping people have a way to feel shine and then have it be part of who they are and share it with others.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
This is amazing.
I mean,
can we break down shine a little bit? So for some people, when you first started talking about success or feeling pride, for some people, they may have the sensation of like, oh, well, I'm not allowed to show that I'm successful, or I'm not allowed to be proud of myself. You know, I know my husband has a Catholic upbringing, and that's something that's sometimes a friction. It's like, how can you be proud of yourself? Whereas I love to shine my shine. Can you deconstruct it a little bit to give everybody permission to shine?
Well, on Twitter, I said, hey, you know, come answer some questions for me. And I gave people these scenarios. Oh, you've been studying really hard on an exam, and then you take the test and you look and see you got a great score. What emotion do you feel at that moment? So I gave them various success scenarios, and I had people say, what is the name of that emotion? What is the name of the emotion? And the response is, there was no one clear response. Some people said joy, some people said satisfaction, and so on. So that, at least in my journey to figure out what the name of this emotion was, said, well, there is no agreed upon name for it. And did some testing of different names, and shine fit the best. Now, to your point, or where I think your point was, is some people are really resistant to that. They don't embrace feelings of success. It's like they resist feeling success, resist feeling shine. And I don't know why that happens, but I know it happens. But people can learn to embrace it, because people have with tiny habits. You know, they're like, oh my gosh, now I just, and this is, you know, when they do that, that starts changing everything for them. When they go from a resistor of positive emotions, and specifically shine, to somebody who can generate it and then also embrace it and not resist it. And that, you know, if I have one dream, one aspiration for my book and my career, it's to change the culture of where people, rather than just beating themselves up and self-trash talk, they're finding the good in what they've done. And yes, there's some things that didn't go the way I wanted, but they're finding the good things and they're feeling good about those and feeling positive. And then they're also doing that for other people and with other people.
Maybe the first step to changing the culture for those who feel like they don't have permission because they feel like shining is is a narcissistic act or an act that, you know, I'm not allowed to have this goodness for myself. When you put it in the context, which you just did, of your shining is the good for the world. That is the thing that changes your life and then changes everybody else's life. That is the beginning of the snowball coming down the hill of, you know, a better engagement with one another or better sensations in our lives and society, whatever it is, that allowing yourself to shine actually elevates everyone else or is the beginning of that social elevation.
I love that, you know, and that's testable. So I, as a, you know, experiments guy, it's like, oh, I could run an experiment and test the impact of, we're going to frame it this way, we're going to frame it that way and see which group then is actually puts it into practice more. Thank you for that. Because that is an experiment that I can do.
Yeah. You can also run the group dynamic experiment, which is when one person does this method, does something within the group change? Harder experiment to run, many variables to control.
That's the dynamic, or that's the eventual outcome of this, is how it affects others as well. Well, I'll just share one more personal thing. You got me to talk. So my own sister. So I was pretty natural at saying victory and being open to it. And then my sister, Linda, was not at all. She didn't do the celebration piece of tiny habits till I kind of sat her down and said, Linda, it's part of the method. It's not optional. If you want to wire the habit in, this is it. And the way she got there, Ariel, was she did this thing that we now call a celebration blitz. And the easiest way to do that is to go into a part of your house that's untidy and then just pick something up and put it into its place and go, yes. And then tidy something else and go, good for me. So you just do thing after thing after thing, each time celebrating, each time saying, I did a good job, or you look at it and you visualize how much better. You know, you play around with things that will help you feel successful. And you do 3 minutes of that, tidy, 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 tidy. And then you just pause and you reflect on how you're feeling and you feel different. And it's like, in just 3 minutes, look what just happened. Through celebrating. And that was the thing that shifted my sister. She's like, oh, no, this is real. I just felt it. This is real.
That good is reinforcing.
She began, and she calls herself now a celebration convert and teaches other people. I know. And teaches other people to do it. So that is, you know, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, I could just do that 3 minute. And the tidying thing is the easiest thing to do because, you know, most of us can tidy stuff up. Set a timer and just start putting things in their place or straightening them. And each time saying, good for me, way to go. Awesome. This looks better. Bam, 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 bam. And then just pause when the timer goes off and just tune in to what you're feeling.
I can imagine that would feel really good. And having a 3-year-old, I am constantly telling him, good job. And when he puts away something and I'm happy and I'm like, please put that away again. Please, 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 please. It's like, great job. You did awesome. Yes, you're going to do that. That's awesome. Good job. And I imagine that for those who got a lot of positive reinforcements as a child, this feels great because it's like the mom in your head saying great job. And for those that didn't get a lot of positive reinforcement in childhood, this is healing. This is like the validation that they've been seeking and not recognizing that they've been seeking their whole life.
That is really interesting. Do you see that on a spectrum, on a continuum, or do you see that as categories?
It's on a continuum, certainly.
Yeah.
And I know as a therapist, I would have lots of people in my office who, you know, have parents who wouldn't be positively reinforcing, and they'd feel like if they, you know, congratulated their kid for an A, then they'd just be making them lazy. And so they'd withhold the positive reinforcement, and it's quite damaging. I remember one client telling me about hearing her mom talking to a friend and talking about how proud she was of the A that she just got. And my client was shocked because the mother had never said this to her. And so this was like a yearning her whole life. And so I could certainly imagine a situation like this, if you've given yourself permission to say good job, like the thing that you've been waiting to hear your whole life, whoa, you can actually give yourself. You don't have to wait for somebody else to give it to you. You don't have to wait for your boss to say that was great or to recognize your work. You can recognize your own work. And that sense of agency is very empowering. And that ability to like solve that yearning that we all have to be seen is incredibly powerful and meaningful. It's not just a celebration. It's It's, you know, an active existence.
So part of what we do, when I say we, I mean myself and the coaches I've trained in this method and so on, is you have to help people find a celebration that feels authentic to each person. What I do may not work for you and so on. And have, ideally, people have a range of celebrations. And one thing I advocate in Tiny Habits is you have one that is super powerful that you only use when you need to wire in a habit very, very quickly. And in my own life, I have one, and it relates to what you're talking about. When I need to really fire off, shine in a big way, because I have a habit I need to form very, very quickly, I think of my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Bondietti in Fresno, California. And she was a tough teacher, but I really respected her. And I imagine her saying to me, "You did a good job." You know, some celebrations are more effective than others. That one for me, you know, somehow her saying, "You did a good job," boom, very, very reinforcing and makes me feel tons of shine. The Olympics are coming up. Watch what the athletes do when they perform especially well. They naturally celebrate.
Yep.
Okay.
Arms up.
Just
victory.
Watch. Yeah. And I was watching this 4 years ago in the last Olympics, like, there it is. There it is. And I have this sense that these high performers naturally celebrated. And that's why they're in the Olympics. They were able to naturally go, "Good job. Good for me." They celebrate and then reinforce that exceptional behavior. So that becomes the habit, that becomes the norm. One of the things that I'm sure people find the craziest in Tiny Habits, where I'm like, "Oh, you want to create a new habit of, you know, putting some lavender on before to go to bed? Well, rehearse it. Rehearse it 7 to 10 times in a row where you put it on, you go, good for me, and then do it again, and then do it again, all in one session, you know, like within 3 minutes. Rehearse it just like an athlete rehearses, you know, serves or 3-point shots or whatever, and rehearse it with a celebration. And then when the evening comes and the moment comes, watch what happens. Your brain goes, "Oh,
wired.
Put the lavender on."
Yep.
Yeah. So you're actually doing habit rehearsal with celebration to wire the habit in really, really fast. When you have the perspective that habit formation is a skill, then it makes total sense. You would rehearse. You rehearse the habit like, "Oh, I put down the toothbrush. I floss one tooth. I celebrate. I do it again. I do it again. I do it again in a session." It's like 3 minutes of doing it a few times, you know, 10 times. And then when it comes to it in the real life, just like Stephen Curry doing a 3-point in real life, boom, just you want it to be automatic. You don't want to be thinking about it.
That makes complete and total sense. Basically, you've just offered a hack for quick neuroplasticity. I mean, all you're doing is you're trying to get neurons to wire together in a habit loop effectively. And so you just repeat the action with a positive emotion and a good positive dose of neurochemistry right after it, repeated in succession many times. All you've done is you've wired together that group of neurons really quickly and really effectively. So the next time you go to do the thing, the next natural action is that neuronal network. Like, super simple. So let's talk about some of the practical habits that people might be trying to form in 2020. The obvious ones being weight loss, eating well, and going to the gym. So can you walk us through how people would take the tiny habits approach to establishing each of those habits?
Let's start with exercise or physical activity. Well, first of all, let's get clear that weight loss is a function of what you eat, not so much physical activity. But physical activity is so good for you. So yes. So what you do is you, that like, "Oh, I want to be more active," or "I want to work out more." That's an abstraction.
The big abstraction. I'm just going to be fit. I'm just going to work out. Yes.
In what you see in Tiny Habits is you put it inside a cloud. So you have this cloud-like structure and you write, you know, "Be more physically active" inside the cloud. Outside the cloud, you have these boxes where you write specific behaviors with arrows to it, like, "Oh, walk for an hour every morning," and you draw an arrow to the cloud. So you put these concrete, tangible things outside of it with arrows going in.
Okay.
And what you do is you come up with a whole bunch of different behaviors you can do that would lead to the aspiration of being more physically active. "Oh, I could dance once a week at, you know, square dancing. I could do squats every time in the bathroom after I pee. I could da 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 da." And so you come up with a whole bunch. And there's a way to do it. I won't go into details here, but I call it magic wanding. It's a brainstorming method where you come up with tons of them. Then once you have a whole bunch of options, then you get realistic and say, which one of these is really a match for me? Because you're not going to do them all. So you're looking for a behavior or a set of behaviors that have three criteria. One, will it be effective in having you be more physically active? So effectiveness. Two is, do you want to do the behavior? And then three is, can you do the behavior? So the want and the can maps to my behavior model, motivation and ability. Mm-hmm. So you're looking for one of the behaviors or more, and I call that a golden behavior that's effective, you want to do and you can do. Then you focus on that and have that become a habit. A big part of what I teach is you need to match yourself with the right behaviors for you, what I call the golden behaviors. And you don't just guess. You don't just guess.
How do you know what the right behavior for you is if you're not just guessing?
Well, because you go through systematically. There's a way to do a sorting that I explain in the book where you sort along two dimensions. The quick and dirty way I also explain in the book is you go through and you look at, let's say you come up with 20 different ways you could be more active, physically active. So then you go and you put a star by each one of those that you think has real impact, that would truly have impact from a science perspective. So you find five or six and, you know, star them. Those are going to be effective. Then you go circle the ones that you think you can get yourself to do. So then you go like, okay, what can I really get myself to do? Yeah. And so you circle those. Then you look for the items that have both circles and stars. Those are the matches for you. That's how you match yourself with the best new habits for you. If you pick good matches for you, then you can create habits really, really readily. If you pick a bad match, you know, a friend tells you to do this or somebody tells you to do that, you're like, oh, I don't really want to, but I'm going to try. You're probably not going to succeed. There is a way to figure out what the best behaviors are. Because that could be for snacking. It could be for exercise. It could be for strengthening relationships. It could be for mindfulness. It could be for stress reduction. Any one of those things you put inside that cloud.
And so let's continue with exercise for a minute. How would you then use the tiny habits method? So it's exercise. I've now chosen walking and doing 7-minute high intensity exercise in the evening.
Okay, good. Let me take the walking. And what you would say is, well, how do I make this really, really simple? And I already kind of know the answer because I work with so many people on this. The tiny version of walking is to just put on your walking shoes. So you take the bigger walking behavior and you make it really, really, really tiny. And so putting on your walking shoes is a good option there. And you say, okay, when is an appropriate time to do this? Well, maybe as soon as you get home from work. So then the recipe becomes, after I put my bag down at home, after I'm done with work, then I put on my walking shoes and I celebrate. So the habit is actually putting
on
your...
I forgot the celebration. Right,
then you celebrate.
Walking
it.
Shoes, woohoo! So, rock on, yeah. Walk
and,
on.
And what happens most of the time is once people put them on, they actually go out and walk. But the habit in this case, because you're making it tiny and you're hacking it, is just put on your walking shoes. Now, if you decide not to go walking, that's fine. You still celebrate it. You did the habit. You put your walking shoes on. So this is how, again, it's different. You don't have to actually go walking, but most people will. And eventually they'll create the bigger and bigger practice of going out and walking.
And so once I put on the walking shoes, if for a few days, I then procrastinate once my walking shoes are on and like go to the television or whatever, not that I have a TV, would you then focus on creating the next easiest habit from that, which would be, I guess, standing outside the door? I've got my walking shoes on, celebrated, worked that one. Habit two, open the door and walk outside. That's all I got to do. And then go woohoo.
No, what I would do is if you find yourself not actually walking, I would go back and say, oh, did I really want to walk? No, I didn't. Then you have to face the reality. It's like, well, I thought I wanted to walk, but I guess I don't. Pick something else. Pick dancing or pick something else. So if you find your habit doesn't thrive and grow, it's a sign that either it's too hard in walking shoes or you don't really want to do it. And if you don't want to do it, that's okay. Pick something else. In the tiny habits method, you don't beat yourself up for that. But if you end up not loving the habit, like if you end up not walking, then that's a sign you didn't really want it. And then you learn something. So go back to all your other options and pick an exercise you do want to do. Now, let's say it's dancing. And so for dancing, you make it really, really tiny. Boom, you turn on disco, you dance for a little bit, and that you know, and see how that goes. And if that develops into a habit you love and grows, then that was good. If it doesn't, look for something else. So there is a real sense of exploration in tiny habits, the mentality of it. And if something's not working, that's fine. You know, it's not like you have to do it. Pick something you want to do. And sometimes you don't really know that till you start trying it.
And what a relief. So I know a fundamental part of your thesis in Tiny Habits is non-judgment, which is something we as meditators talk a lot about. Non-judgment. It didn't work. It's okay. It didn't work. And being okay with your mistakes and making multiple mistakes that then allow you to just get to the thing that works.
Yeah. Nobody is perfect in creating these changes. And what makes it even harder is the environment around us. I mean, let's take the way nutrition. Oh my gosh, the food landscape around us is so terrible. It makes it so hard. And then it's not just the food options, it's the people around us and our friends and so on. So we really have some big challenges to overcome from an environment perspective. And so wiring in good nutrition habits will take some trial and error. I would start with snacking. I would first and foremost say, okay, I need to change how I eat. Let me really figure out new habits on snacking. So don't worry about stopping anything. Just start finding new habits. So I have a set of snacks I can go to whenever I'm hungry. Start with creating the new habits of snacking. Don't beat yourself up over the cake and the cookies and the donuts or whatever. Just find snacks you love, double down on them, triple down on them, and then go from there. That's where I would start for sure.
So do a big cloud. The aspiration is snack, eat better. The activities below it are snack better. Okay, the aspiration is eat healthy snacks. The activities are the different things you could snack on. What are the things that are achievable, that I want to do, that are realistic? Find the Venn diagram.
And impact also, and the impact that are also truly healthy. So part of it is understanding, and this is the impact dimension, like what is truly nutritious and not, and then also what you like to do and you can do. The next thing to tackle would be breakfast. Figure out a breakfast that you totally love and that's totally satisfying, totally on your game plan. Now, once the habit's wired in, you don't have to celebrate anymore. I mean, it doesn't hurt you. But the celebration piece is to form the habit. Once it's wired in, celebration is optional.
So in summary, for people who are looking to change habits this year and stick to their 2020 resolutions, the steps are, of course, get the book and follow it. But so that people have something in their mind when they get off and they feel like they've been successful listening to this and that they've achieved something in the listening to of this podcast, they are going to think.
Okay, pick a habit that you want and then make it. Really pick the smallest version of that habit. So just pare it down to something so tiny and small that it's ridiculous. Then find where it fits naturally in your day. What does it come after? And then write it out. You know, after I sit on the bus, I will open my book and read one sentence. There's your habit. And then as you do that, celebrate, have a positive emotion to wire that habit in. And that's what you do. That's the three hacks. Hack one is make it tiny. Hack two is you remind yourself through a routine you already do what it comes after. Hack three is the emotions piece. Celebrate to wire it in. So bringing those things together.
You can do it without judgment. Don't worry if you make mistakes. If it doesn't work for you, just try the next one.
Yep. Revise it, change up. Do more than one habit at a time. The advice one habit at a time is baloney. 40,000 people I've coached, 40,000 plus have done three habits at a time. You learn more by doing three. You can do even more if you want. And be flexible and playful and have fun with it. Don't be uptight. The rigidity isn't the way that you change. You change through flexibility and adjusting and learning and adapting as you go. So as much as you can, even though it might be a serious topic, try to be playful and try to see it as a journey and an exploration. You will get there if you keep going. You will figure it out if you keep going, but you will have twists and turns. You absolutely will, but just keep going. That would be my advice.
Amazing. So for everybody looking to start a new habit in 2020 to improve some aspect of your life or change it, there is a formula. There is hope. There is going to be delight, and this is going to feel great. And you can pick up Tiny Habits to learn more.
Ariel, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to talk about things I don't often get to talk about. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for being so open and candid. This is a complete honor and pleasure.
All the best.
That was BJ Fogg talking about habit change. You can pick up his book, Tiny Habits, at Amazon or your favorite bookseller. If you're curious about Muse, I actually have some incredibly good news. We just launched a brand new product, Muse S. Muse S is a fabric headband that gives you real-time feedback on your heart, breath, and body during meditation. And in addition, it lets you take your Muse experience into even more places. Muse S can help you fall asleep faster with beautiful guided meditations and responsive bio and neurofeedback that actually creates a personalized soundtrack to help lull you into sleep. This is a lot of words, but I'm like insanely excited because literally today we have launched Muse S. This is a product that we spent the last year making to help people both meditate more effectively and fall asleep faster. You can find out more at choosemuse.com. And happy 2020. Happy everything that's going to come your way in the decade and beyond.